Welcome to Community Conversations, a special series of The Odyssey. I'm your host, Bethany. In this series, we invite members of the community to talk with us in the 970 West studio about their passions. We encourage all listeners to enjoy this episode with an open mind and an open heart. Visit mesacountylibraries.org or your favorite Mesa County Libraries location for more information and resources on the topics we discuss. Thank you for tuning in, everyone. I am here with our communications coordinator, Emmy Ferris, and we are joined today by Tremaine Jackson, the head football coach at Colorado Mesa University. Coach Jackson, thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule to come speak with us today.
I appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me.
Of course. You've had quite the year. So in late 2019, you were hired as the head football coach. Mm-hmm. And then in addition to moving, recruiting new players, and making relationships with the players that were already on the team, you have also had to deal with a pandemic, and you've had an active role in the movement against racial inequality in this community. So how's it going so far?
It's actually going good.
Good.
We're still excited. The program is moving forward, and like you said, recruiting both current players and new players all kind of happen at the same time. Get ready for spring ball, and then we get hit with a pandemic. So we were able to still get a lot of work done and still while we were in quarantine. And so and then with all that's been happening in our country from a racial side of things, it's been that part of it has been a fight that I've always been involved in. It's just now become more national. And so We're just in it. We're waking up every morning and we're going every day and taking things as they come. But it's still been fun and we're still excited.
Good. And you grew up in Houston, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what was it like growing up there in Houston?
You know, it was all I knew for the first 18 years of my life, obviously. And I'm a grandma's boy. I grew up with my grandmother and grandfather, and he passed. My mom was still there, but my grandmother raised me from a baby all the way through high school, even when my mother got married and left. So it was home. We take a lot of pride in being from Houston, and being from Texas, period, and then being a part of football in Texas. Things are a little different from that realm down there. So it was a fun growing up, but it was tough at times. It was tough, and it really, I think growing up there really prepared me for life.
I was going to say, I'm sure that your experiences as a kid have shaped you into the person and coach you are today. Also, I know my grandma was a tough woman, so yeah. I'm sure it was the same in your family.
Yeah, definitely grew up faster, became more mature growing up with your grandmother than you normally would.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And you've also lived in several other places throughout your life. You came from, if I'm getting it correct.
Texas State. Yep.
And you also were in Missouri at some point.
Yeah, I was in Springfield, Missouri. I did a tour in Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Okay.
For 4 years, and I bounced around in the state of Texas and West Texas, East Texas, back in Houston, and then being in the Central Texas area this past year. So, been well traveled over the last 15 years.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
But no, it's been fun.
How does Grand Junction compare to these other places?
When I got off the plane here on my interview, I immediately compared it to Sioux Falls.
Ooh, okay.
Without mountains, and it's way colder in Sioux Falls, South Dakota than it probably could ever be here in Grand Junction. And so, but from a town and city standpoint, with Fruita right outside of here, there was a similar place right outside of Sioux Falls. Mm-hmm. So as I drove around and saw the different places, it was a lot like Sioux Falls. I found Popeyes down in Clifton.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
So once we saw that, I was fired up.
You were set? Nice.
Got the amenities.
That's it.
And based on my research, you've been heavily involved in diversity and equality for some time. Yeah. I saw that you were a special teams intern with the San Diego Chargers as part of their minority coaching fellowship.
Yep.
And you're also a board member of the Minority Coaches Advancement Association.
Mm-hmm.
What was or was there a turning point in your life or career where you thought, this is something I want to be involved in?
Yeah, so me playing college football and playing football my whole life and playing with other Black players and just a multitude of diversities, I realized that when I got into coaching, there weren't many that it, the reflection of playing did not reflect coaching. Mm-hmm. And I always kind of felt like that was a problem. I was the guy in the locker room as a player that if I saw something, I'd say something. Mm-hmm. And that's probably got taken out of turn a lot of times. But when I became older and started getting a job, I just knew that there was a problem. And I always wanted to say something about it. And you kind of get locked in these times where you don't want to say anything because you don't want to ruin your career. Mm-hmm. And finally, when I started becoming in position of leadership, being a coordinator, being an assistant head coach at Sioux Falls, I just started pointing things out. And I knew that the product that we were coaching was really good. So I felt like if the product was good and we knew what we were doing, then I had every right to say something because nobody could hold what we were doing against me as far as me saying something. So it's been probably the last 5 years or so, I've been really, really vocal about things that we're seeing in our country. And now we see it more on a national level, but we've been in this fight for a long time.
Yeah, and I think we definitely see your leadership now coming to head with you were part of the protest, the peaceful protest, yep. And the walk-in to the police station.
Yeah.
Also, it seems like you're very in touch with President Tim Foster at mm-hmm. Colorado Mesa and a lot of the things that have been going on there, such as the Walter Walker Field rename.
Yep.
Also, so you can definitely see how involved you are.
Yeah. Yes. You know, it was the fun part about that, Bethany, is having a guy like President Foster that wants to support that. Mm-hmm. Whenever your boss supports what you're trying to say, then it makes it a lot easier. When this deal first happened, I kind of fell into being in that police station. I wasn't going to end up in the police mm-hmm. station. I was going to support. And I had already met with Chief Shoemaker, and so I kind of already knew where we were headed with some things. And so that police station deal just kind of happened, but it opened some eyes, and it's been fun because our university has gotten together a committee, and our first big deal was renaming Walker Field, and they've taken the approach that we want to call out things that are wrong, and we want to make change. And so anytime you work for somebody like that, then it makes things a lot easier.
It definitely does. Yeah. And I know here, our director has also taken that stance. So mm-hmm. it's a lot easier to speak out against those topics when you
no
have
doubt.
The backing.
No doubt. No, you feel better.
You do.
You honestly feel better. And so, you know, it's been really good for me.
How do you think your experience as a coach translates into becoming a leader in our community, whether necessarily you were looking to be a leader in our community or not? How does that translate from being a coach?
Yeah, I think when you are the head coach in a community mm-hmm. like this, you have some access that the average person doesn't have. Sometimes that's good access. Sometimes that's bad access, depending upon how the game went the day before and things of that nature. But I realized really quickly the platform that we have here and the access to people that we have here that make decisions. We have to use that for the greater good of everybody, not just for the football team, not just for the university, but for this community. And one thing I saw, the way we all came together with this COVID-19 deal, and we're all wearing masks in here, we surrendered our own personal thoughts for the greater good of everybody. That was the challenge to me. I thought the good Lord gave us a blueprint on how to handle this racial injustice once and for all. And I challenged our people to handle it the same way that we've handled COVID. And so to have that access to be able to challenge those people, that's why I think this has been the way it's been with me. I'm not the only leader in this community. I'm just one of a few, and there's actually some other people way out more in front. But because of what I do, because of what we are in this community, we're able to say some things and people listen a little faster than most.
I think you also have a unique position in that you are part of a community of college students
yep.
and maybe even the high school students that are looking to go into college.
Yep.
So you're a voice also for that group of people, and you're able to give them a voice also.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that was what I really appreciated with your walk-in is that you let people speak,
mm-hmm.
and then when it got to a certain point, you stepped in.
Yeah.
And also, I really appreciated how your players were shaking Chief Shoemaker's hand.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was really good to see.
Yeah.
Sure.
No, it's you know, going back to that day, I challenged our team to be the example, because we come together every August. We put 130 some guys and 11 coaches and trainers and staff, probably about 160 people all together to work toward one common goal. And we don't care where those people came from. If they can help us, then they can help us. You know, we put them in our family. And so I felt like that was the example that the world needs to see, starting with our community. But it doesn't matter where you come from. If you can help this team, if you can help work toward one common goal, which is equality and being united, then come get on the team and help us. And so we kind of use that analogy, and that's what we've been working toward.
Great. I also really appreciated how this is a collaboration between you and Chief Shoemaker mm-hmm. and others in the community.
Yep.
And I think you said that's why it's been able to stay peaceful,
yep.
is because they're willing to listen.
Yep.
And they also escorted, I saw they were walking with the protesters
yep.
as well, walking them across the streets. So that's great to see.
Yeah. You know, we've got a really unique relationship before me with GJPD and Chief Shoemaker, starting with our own campus police and Pua and his crew and what they were already doing there before I even got there, where our issues on campus weren't a lot. And so it makes it easier when you already have that previous relationship to get in touch with Chief Shoemaker and say, hey, how can we all come together and now address this issue the same way we've been addressing these other issues before, and make our community the light. That's kind of the theme that he and I talk about all the time, making our community the example for the rest of the state and the rest of this country. And if we can do that here along with other communities, then we can get it spread a lot faster.
Yeah, and it's such a small community.
Yeah.
I think that's even more incredible that we would have such an impact on the nation.
It. Yeah,
definitely. And I know we've already made some steps, such mm-hmm. as your meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And also we had our first annual Juneteenth mm-hmm. celebration. And there's been protests and teach-ins. But what else does the community need to improve? Where else could we improve?
Yeah, you know, I'm starting to eat dinner at places I never thought I'd eat dinner with different people, because like you guys, like we're sitting here talking, it's an educational opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for as many people, black people especially, that can get in front of other white people and educate people on what to do. Or what you can say. What I'm finding in this community is not that people are blatantly racist. They just haven't had to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
So ignorance is not the excuse, but it's literally just being ignorant to not having to deal with certain things their whole lives. Education is the key. And so we ask people to acknowledge that there's a problem. And once we've acknowledged that there's a problem, then now we can begin to educate one another on what the issue is. I can tell you what I know, you can tell me what you've experienced, and then we can move forward. And once we acknowledge it and educate each other, then we can go spread it to our friends. And so we have a deal, I'm always looking for abbreviations in our program. We call it AES. We say we want to acknowledge, we want to educate, and we want to spread the word. And so what I would tell you is to do more. When people ask me what can they do, when you get the education, spread it to your friends and don't allow them to get away with certain things
mm-hmm.
that may have been, Jane, she just Jane.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let that slide anymore so we can get a handle on it, just like we're doing with COVID-19.
Yeah. That goes back to something you said in a 9 News interview where you said, everybody becomes comfortable
mm-hmm.
being comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to address a racial issue, we have to become uncomfortable.
No doubt. No doubt. It is one of the most uncomfortable conversations that you can have, especially when we're opposite race.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some people outside of this community and through my lifetime that I've experienced, and I've been like, whoa, these people are lost. That is not the way anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There's also been some people that you go, man, he's probably ahead of the curve than what I'm used to. And so, you know, you just got to be able to be okay being uncomfortable while you're having the conversation and really hear the message and then go back and spread it.
Definitely.
I think AES, is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
It ties right back into the library's mission statement, which is to learn, discover, create, and connect.
That's it.
You have to be open to learning
yep.
and then sharing that and having a conversation with people who have different backgrounds than you.
No doubt. I just learned something today with the library's mission statement. Oh, yeah.
Going to the library, what does the library need to do to support the community, specifically the Black, Indigenous, and people of color community? Yeah,
I would showcase those books. Mm-hmm. I would have more, not waiting to Black History Month, not waiting to Hispanic Heritage Month, not waiting to those months, mm-hmm. But having that stuff on display, just like we've got the Christopher Columbus book readily accessible, or the other books, you know what I mean, that have not taught us the full history. I would put other books on in from minorities, especially Black people or Indigenous people, out on display. I mean, we're sitting on Indian land right now. Mm-hmm. I think I didn't know that until I read it in like a magazine before I took the job here. Well, that needs to be displayed, and the library is education. And so that's the fastest place they can get it if they just choose to go read. And so I think we as a library can expand that education and really, really help educate people at a faster rate just because of what you're about.
What's interesting is the Mesa County population that we serve is so fascinated with local history. Mm-hmm. And so we have a weekly blog that our information services team puts out. And you would be shocked how much people just don't realize is available to them regarding just local agriculture and how years ago, you know, Indigenous people lived here and then certain populations came in and took things over. Yep. And it is the library's job to be an archive for that information and to make it accessible. Mm-hmm. I think because we have such a wide scope of resources mm-hmm. that we offer, it tends to get buried. Mm-hmm. And now is the perfect time to just dust those off the shelf and be like, here they are, and then continue to evolve our collection to include Black authors and local history that for whatever reason has been not talked about, or we shine light on the good things that bad people have done. I think it's time to right those wrongs for sure.
Yeah. Oh. I will admit, growing up here, I did not learn about the KKK. It was not in our curriculum at all. Oh. And so looking at the local history blogs that our team does, I learned about Walter Walker and the things he did. And I also learned about The Hooded Empire, which is a book written about Mesa County KKK. Mm-hmm. And so I think we do have those resources available, but we don't promote them enough,
which is
unfortunate. But I'm hoping that we move toward that with this.
Well, I would venture to say that both sides should be promoted mm-hmm. Because I think it's good for people to understand what people were back then too, mm-hmm. Whether they were good or bad or whatever, here's what they were. And it is what it is with what they were. Mm-hmm. And so I think oftentimes we forget that history is his story and that some people can dictate their story based on how they wanted it to be left. And so we've got to get to the root of it. And I think you guys have that resource.
I think so much of it, too, is tied to just personal shame. Like, no one's going to want to talk about the bad things that maybe their great-great-grandfather did. Yeah. But if we own up to that and are just laying it out on the table and apologizing, like, I know there's nothing I could have done to prevent this because, you know, I wasn't born or whatever. But mm-hmm. I'm making the conscious decision now to notice those ingrained biases that are subconsciously there and work on those mm-hmm. and treat people with the respect that they deserve.
It goes back to the acknowledgement. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, that this movement that you're seeing, this younger generation, they're not just sitting in restaurants and getting pulled off bar stools anymore. Mm-hmm. This younger generation strikes a match and they want to burn it. Mm-hmm. And so I think what we used to do as adults in my generation, I'm 36 and I'm sitting up here talking like I'm 55. So, my generation, I was raised to do what I tell you to do and sit over here in the corner until I tell you to do it. Well, these kids have been negotiated with their whole lives until they want answers. And I think we have to provide them answers, mm-hmm. not so that they won't tear anything up, but so that we finally get answers. Because me as a Black man, I want answers too. Mm-hmm. I was taught to go about it a little bit different. But at the end of the day, we want answers. And so the challenge to the younger generation is that when things don't go their way, then they can't quit mm-hmm. because that's their MO. So the MO of older people like myself is we don't want to give them answers. We want them to do what we tell them to do. Well, their MO is when they don't get the answers as fast as they want them or how they want them, then they quit and fizzle out. And I think right now we have to keep the same energy, as they would say, and keep the same consistency with making sure we get answers, but then having some substance behind it to be able to move forward in the right way.
Sure. And that just ties back to having the education.
Yeah.
To support those progressive ideas.
That's
yeah.
it.
And it almost goes to, like, you could make an analogy with football. Mm-hmm. You do a lot of practice, yep. and you build up to that final product. It's not one day of practice, and then you can suddenly go do the
That's
game.
It. That's
you got to practice and practice and practice in order to make a showing.
Well, in football, they ask why now more than ever. Mm-hmm. When I played in high school, it was, I'm just going to do this because the coach told me to do it, and that's what he said. Now it's kind of like, well, coach, why are we running that way? And me as a coach, I've got to give him an answer. That's the only way we're going to get it ran to the fullest and executed to the fullest extent that it could be. Mm-hmm. So I think times have changed. Kids haven't changed. Adults have changed. And so we have to now adhere and teach in the manner that they've been teaching, and it's a wide generation, and we've got to give them an answer.
Yeah. You did a really great job, I think, with one of your team meetings recently, where you as coaches stepped back
mm-hmm.
and you let the players ask questions of one another.
Yep.
And I don't think that's something that people are often given the opportunity to do in a safe space.
Yep.
And so I really appreciated that you let them ask questions
yeah.
and confront it in a safe place.
Well, they're talking. Whether we let them yeah. talk or not, they're talking. And I told our staff, it's probably better if we're in the room when they're talking so that we can be the educators in the room. But we have to let them vent it out. And it was a productive vent session. But then we ended it with, hey, here's where we're going. And they've been making strides towards that ever since. I've talked to a lot of coaches that didn't allow their teams to do that. And one thing that this movement can do, it can split anything that you had going in the right direction. I didn't want to split our football team because I didn't think our football program deserved that. I wanted to make sure we use this as an educational opportunity and a way to get better. And so that's what we chose to do. And part of that is letting them bunch of dudes get in there and vent it out with each other and fight it out if we had to. And then once it was over, we knew which way we were going.
One of our former team librarians loved college football. And she opened my eyes to just the metaphor of how college football in particular is such the epitome of how humans can interact with each other mm-hmm. and succeed at something.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to start in the locker room. You mm-hmm. have to be comfortable, you know, knowing someone's strengths and weaknesses because it translates onto the field.
Yep. Yep.
So if you don't allow them to have that type of positive conversation, whether or not there is some anger or frustrations vented in mm-hmm. that situation, how do you expect it to translate over onto the field?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I tell our kids, hear the message, not the tone. Sometimes as a coach, I'm yelling, I'm aggressive, but there's a message in what I'm saying. Again, we as adults have to flip back and go, they're yelling, they're screaming, they might be even cussing, but there's a message behind the tone. And sometimes as adults, we don't want to hear that. We think it's disrespectful. And sometimes it is. But ultimately, when people are hurt and people are wanting to get their point across, you have to be able to take all that stuff, put it aside and really dig into the meat of the situation. And so I think our kids have done that. They continue to do that. We meet with them in small groups once a week about other issues outside of football. And I think college football is the greatest sport in the world.
who would have thought that?
But no, when you really look at it, it's the only sport. Even in the NFL, they don't do this, but college football is the only sport where there's 100+ guys all working together for the common goal. I think baseball might be the closest with 60. But you're talking about 130 in our program. And I've got 5 black coaches, 5 white coaches, and 1 Hispanic coach. I mean, it just kind of happened like that. But it's 141 of us in a room, and we're working toward the common goal. I don't know of another sport that does it that way. And you got to go get hit in the face in order to make this common goal happen. So
yeah. probably am getting this quote of yours wrong, but you talked about not just making good players, but making young men out of your program.
Yeah.
And this opportunity that you've afforded them in order to speak their truth and and to connect with one another, I think really works at that and will make them leaders within the campus community in a place that has typically not seen very much diversity. Growing up here, I can say that definitely not a lot of diversity here. So I'm really appreciative of that. And I know, I'm not sure if this is correct or not, but one of the previous players is actually staying in Grand Junction, if I'm...
Previous player, a lot of them are here.
A lot of them, okay. Yeah. I think what our director said was that one of them decided to stay after graduation to lead the right and wrong group. I don't know if that's correct.
Yeah, so he didn't play for me.
Oh, okay, he played
for me. Yeah, he was here before, so I'm not sure what his plans are. But yeah, he didn't, I think there's a couple of former players involved in that group as well.
That's really great to see.
Yeah.
It's nice to see people come in and not just come for college, but stay because of the community.
And that's the challenge. Yeah. You know, it's, I'll be honest with you, I've told people in this community, why would they stay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why you come here to play football, you get your degree, and you book it on back to Denver or whatever city you're from as fast as you can, because you look around and you don't see many people that look like you, in the community. And so now I think there's going to be a stronger push for guys to make Grand Junction home afterwards, because there's things like we've gotten a scholarship for the police academy that President Foster decided to come up with, where any minority kid on our team that wants to be a cop can have a for sure way to get in the academy if he's a criminal justice or political science major. Well, that makes people stay. When you say, I got a job for you, people stay, because, you know, it's not easy getting jobs. Mm-hmm. And then just doing things in the community where the community is becoming more diverse, it makes people more comfortable. Well, then that way people stay and start families here and things of that nature. So I think with what's going on now, that'll be the norm, not just to lead a group, but just to have a home and start a family.
Yes. I wanted to talk about something else I also heard in one of your interviews, that you actually saw George Floyd play football.
I did.
Yeah.
He played at Yates High School. And Yates High School is in the Houston Independent School District. And my high school, Waltrip, is in that district. And so he played with some of my cousins and against some of my cousins that played high school football. And so I actually got a chance to see his team play. And he was a tight end. That went on to A&M Kingsville. And so that one kind of hit a little different, because you actually say, man, I've seen that before this video. I've seen that guy play high school football. And so I knew who he was, didn't know him personally at all. But, you know, you remember the names on the loudspeakers when you're a football junkie like me as a kid. And so that was a little different.
Yeah, it just shows you how connected we all are without even really knowing.
Yep.
I also wanted to get your thoughts on why you think that this was the catalyst.
Tired comes to mind first. How many more times are we going to see that? But I think that was just the straw that broke the camel's back on just a lot of irritables for Black people, the feeling of being oppressed. Being down and out, not given a chance. Those are some things that I feel or felt waking up in the morning a lot of times. So I think when you watch somebody put a knee on somebody's neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, then you feel like that knee has been on your neck your whole life. And I think that's why it's exploded the way that it has. Because we've seen these cases before. And none of them have been to this magnitude where this movement has went this forward. And so I think tired is probably the word. People are tired of having a knee on their neck.
Mm-hmm.
And we need help in order to get the knee off our necks. And unfortunately, there's people that are still wanting to put a knee on our necks. So I think the movement now is inviting all, it's all encompassing. If you're white, if you're Hispanic, if you're Black, whatever, we all need to get together and move against this conglomerate of people that don't want to take their knee off our necks. And so I would say tired.
Yeah. And your work with the police department really seems like it's trying to go against those biases to make this not happen in our community, where you're doing curriculum on racial inequity and bias. Mm-hmm. So I think that's very important.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to Chief Shoemaker, and I said, man, you know, a lot of times we get cops to come talk to our team. I think it's time for us to come talk to your cops.
Yeah.
Because in essence, I told him, I'm going to hire you on our staff, and you hire me on your staff, and let's make this a conglomerate team effort, because it's like we talked about earlier, it used to be the cops just tell you what to do, and you just do it because they're the cops. Well, now we're seeing that people are taking advantage of that. And so they need to be educated as well so we can get back to community policing. Mm-hmm. If somebody does something wrong, they should be prosecuted to the full extent. They shouldn't have to die. Mm-hmm. And so I think you have to let people deal with people outside of just on the street. And if we do it in training rooms, then we probably got a better opportunity of it not happening outside of the training room.
For sure. Something else that you also mention is that you're really big on acknowledgement. And so I just wanted to get your feeling on how you think that our community is acknowledging the issue.
You know, showing up at a Juneteenth celebration, which for me being from Texas, where that is a real holiday, working at a HBCU where you didn't have to, there didn't have to be a proclamation to take that day off. We were taking that day off. I think to see a community like this do that is the first step. I think we have to continue to have conversations that are uncomfortable. I was on a call and I told a good gentleman, I said, you're sitting there screaming and squirming in your seat. You have to be okay with that right now. And so that type of acknowledgement is what needs to continue to happen. You know, legislation and making laws and all that stuff is good, but what we're really trying to change is somebody's heart. And so when you're trying to change somebody's heart, you can legislate it, but if they really are hateful people, they'll just find a loophole around the legislation. To truly change someone's heart, they have to get to know you. You have to get to know them. There has to be a lot of conversation, and they have to understand why this is an issue. And so I would, you know, the acknowledgement can continue by us having more conversations like these. When you're sitting at the dinner table, making it a part of the conversation on how we can all get better with this situation. Again, I go back to COVID. Just like we're all trying to get over COVID, and it is a continual conversation, we have to do that with racial injustice as well. And so I think the community can do more of that. I don't want to go to everybody's house and eat.
Well, and that's not your responsibility either.
Right.
Families should be able to take it upon themselves to educate, find the free resources that are available at MesaCountyLibraries.org. Hashtag plug. But yeah, it's your responsibility. Like, I had a conversation with my father yesterday, called him for Father's Day, and we ended up talking about some very serious things and educating him on things that he has believed his whole life, which are not correct and not fair to every person around you. So you shouldn't have to go to every person's dinner table. It should spread once someone is open to that education.
Well, and I wouldn't go. But, you know, the deal is also acknowledging that this is not a political issue.
Oh, no.
And don't allow people to change the narrative into what this really is. This is an issue that's been going on for years upon years. And you talk to one person, it's 500, it's 400. Here's what I know. It's been going on my whole life. It went on my grandmother's whole life. And so not allowing people to change the narrative and making sure that people understand, doesn't matter if you're Democrat, Republican, independent, or you don't even vote, this is still a issue and we got to deal with it. And so I think to keep acknowledging that is a way to make sure the community stays on track.
Yeah. I also wanted to get your opinion on something that I've heard both sides about. There's a thought that this is a white issue, right? So white people need to be the ones that are fixing it. But then I've also heard that people of color and people in different communities want to be brought to the table, but they don't feel like it's their responsibility. So I don't know. I guess I just am wondering, do you think it's more of we need to make this a team effort, or is there really one group that needs to sit down and just figure this out?
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny because I started off different than what I am now. Mm-hmm. At first, I would say racism is not my issue. Mm-hmm. I've never been racist. I've always been discriminated against. And I didn't, you know, and let me just back up. In my opinion, black people have every right to be pissed at every white person.
Yeah.
Period. But we're not. Mm-hmm. The majority of black people are not mad at white people. We don't understand. And there are some that are really mad, but we don't understand why the hate is there so much until all these things have happened. So because I thought like that, or that was my thought process, I said, well, racism ain't my problem. You better talk to yourself. I don't need to be talking to you about racism. What I've come to realize is there are some people that just are literally ignorant to this situation because they've never had to deal with it. Mm-hmm. Well, it's my responsibility to make sure everyone is educated about how I feel, and not trying to speak for all black people, but the majority of them probably feel the way that I feel. And so if I have a chance and a platform to educate, then why wouldn't I use that? And so white people need to be willing to listen, mm-hmm. And not feel like it's not their problem, because it is their problem more than it's mine. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to help educate, but you have to be willing to listen so that we can make this a better world, not for me, but for my 14-year-old daughter. Mm-hmm. So when she's 36, maybe she sees some changes. If you look over history, you see that the way things were, we're not at that point anymore. We're out of chains. We're out of segregation. We're still nowhere near where we need to be, mm-hmm. because now we're dealing with, we've got all this legislation. Now we're dealing with people's hearts. Mm-hmm. So again, to change folks' hearts, we got to have conversations. We got to be willing to educate. And so that's where I stand on it now. I'm willing to come to the table, even though I might not think I have to. I'm willing, but I need to be met at the table with other people.
Right. Was there anything else you wanted to use this platform to talk about?
No, I just want to play football.
Yeah, right. You're ready for your meeting tonight.
No, but I like I said, I appreciate you guys. It serves as another educational opportunity, and anything we can do over at CMU from the football department or just from our school, we're always willing to help and get involved. So,
yeah, I think with COVID in particular, the way that the library offers programming and resources to the community, we're going to be migrating more towards community partnerships. Mm-hmm. And CMU and the library is kind of a no-brainer, mm-hmm. when it comes to be able to upsell each other's resources.
No doubt.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to the next year as far as what that looks like to make sure that the whole community is elevated to a place where that conversation can exist.
That's it. You know, we talk a lot about raising your level. And that's what it's happening, and that's what needs to continue to happen. So, again, I appreciate you guys, and let me know what I need to do on my end.
Well, thank you so much, Coach Jackson. We will definitely keep in touch with you, and we're excited to see where else you go and how football goes finally for you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.